Good afternoon. Harvey up here telling jokes, and it's like Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon over here would be Edwina McMahon, I guess. Poor Roxanne. Just loves the role, don't you? This morning I wake up with snow on my deck after 2 days ago having my windows open in 7-degree weather. I don't know, this is, I think the weather is trying to model itself after the world events right now. So you pay attention to current world events, you're seeing a world that's completely in chaos, a society that is reaping what it has sown. This week we've seen the bombing in Boston, which was just absolutely horrific in a lot of ways if you actually read about it and the way they executed it. And the way that was done was with to try to maximize casualties. And so many people, you know, 3 people killed, and these people were had the, I don't know, the guts, I don't know, we'll say that, the brains to sit there and set something down like that, knowing that they were setting a bomb down next to an 8-year-old child and a couple other young people. But the problem was they put a lot of shrapnel in these bombs, and then it just completely hurled all over people, maximizing as much casualty as possible. If you've been looking at it, these folks are from Chechnya. If you look at that, that's a part of Russia over there. Of course, they wouldn't like you to say that because they see themselves, at least the terrorists, see themselves as freedom fighters. So they see themselves as freedom fighters, and they are trying to win over their freedom in Russia. So what in the world are they doing over here bombing us? It's a good question, right? I think the police and the FBI are trying to get the bottom of that, and hopefully this isn't a big wide web. I haven't seen the news today to see if they caught the younger bomber. They actually did. Okay, that's good. I purposely tried not to watch the news on the Sabbath because, not judging anyone who does, I just doesn't get me in a right mental state. It's just preference for me. But that's good news that they did catch that person. Hopefully they can get some good intelligence out of that person. Hopefully stop some more innocent lives if this is truly a wide web. But this is just indicative of a world that has rejected God's way of life, isn't it? I mean, we've seen these things, and it's just pointing to a signs where we're seeing more evilness. Chicago has had one of its evil, or I won't say evil, well, it is evil, deadliest years on record. Well, Chicago happens to be the hometown of the president, the current mayor, served in the president's cabinet. And so you have some of the most powerful people in the world running, you know, with roots to a city, and we can't make any changes at all that would stop it. Because we're trying to do this man's way. We're trying to solve these kind of issues with man's way. And the problem is that man has decided to try to do these, solve these problems on their own. We've seen our teens and preteens in high school and junior high who are having more problems with being sexually deviant. We have a bad global economy and outlook. Recently, China released a report, I think it was, where the economy wasn't doing as well. And gold and the economy in here just crashed down to the bottom for a while. Also seeing a lot of sickness, illness throughout the world. Governments home and abroad are in turmoil. So more and more we're seeing the warning in Isaiah 5:20, aren't we? Isaiah 5:20, which says, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil." Well, last past month or month and a half here, we've seen where the recent debate on what marriage is, and that has been one of those cases where if you are for traditional marriage that comes out of definitions out of this book right here, if you're going with that definition, then you're not cool. You're certainly not hip, and you tend to be bigoted and homophobic if you listen to what the commentators have to say about that. Many people are running to be in the in crowd. So we've seen many politicians who are truly said they are conservative, principled, moral people. Some of them could consider themselves Christians, running to be for homosexual marriage because that's the cool thing right now. One commentator said, if you only have the Bible supporting your argument, you're going to lose. So we're seeing that right there in Isaiah. Say, woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Well, isn't that just the definition of that right there, coming to be right there, is that what is cool is not in line with God's way, and what's God's way is not cool, it's not good, and it's just completely turned the other way. If you listen to a lot of folks, you'll see that what marriage is today is that if you're a young person, you need to wait till you are well into your 30s, maybe even late 20s, early 30s, before you get married. You need to go out and sow your wild oats for a while. sow your wild oats, get it out of your system, which is code word for go sleep around, go to the bars, carouse, have as much fun as you want at everyone else's expense. And then after about 10 years or so, and you're finally tired of the way of life, and you got a ton of baggage in tow, a bunch of battle scars from poor relationships, then you're going to give the best of yourself to your spouse. And that's just funny. I mean, it's sad, really, in a lot of ways, the way people have redefined what the modern-day family is. And the other one I think it's kind of interesting that people think that you also need to go out, you need to try out your spouse for a while. Go live with them for a couple of years, see if you really like them. One person, when I said, well, I hear that doesn't work out so well statistically. And they said, well, the case is that would you buy a car, Zach, without trying it out and driving it for a while? It's just amazing the way we're trying to make things into this certain way we want it to be. And we see that this is what society has said you should be doing. And does it work? Are we seeing an improvement in marriage in the last 20 years since these things have been promoted? No, you haven't seen that. But society's still not going to seek an answer for why things aren't working. I was just thinking about it as I was preparing for this and writing up these notes, that Christina and I have seen probably about 5 people we know pretty well, and I think relatively got married about the same time we did in 2005. About 5 people have going through a divorce right now, or either are divorced, or the relationship or their marriage in such turmoil that they probably will be in divorce, or they're just extremely unhappy. So who knows what will happen. But we were just surprised. I started counting up to how many people we knew that's got the divorce in the year that we got married. And it's like, that's a lot of people. So it was quite surprising to us when we started really thinking about that. So society decided they're going to do it their way and not God's way. Turn to Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3, verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Drop down to 7 here. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Job 5:13 states, I'll just read it here real quick, he catches the wise in their own craftiness. Romans 1:22, and I'll read that too, professing to be wise, they became fools. Romans 11:25, at least you should be wise in your own opinion. Romans 12:16, do not be wise in your own opinion. A theme here, isn't there? There's a theme there. Don't think you're so smart that you don't need anything else. And this is what we're seeing right now. Everyone's decided how they're going to be smart. We're going to be wise to ourselves. We're going to figure it out on our own. We don't need the Bible. We don't need God. And like I said when I started this out, society is reaping what it has sown. Turn to 2 Timothy 3. 2 Timothy 3:1, it says Paul talking to Timothy, giving him a snapshot, a picture of what the future is going to be like. But know this, in the last days, perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And you read through that and you're seeing more and more of that now, aren't we? More and more of this kind of, these attributes, this characteristics of people. One of the things that stood out to me and I started thinking about as I was reading through each one, it said slanderers. Boy, we have a lot of slanderers now. Isn't it so easy to take to Facebook or Twitter or anything else and just slander someone to pieces? Let's cut them down. You can get on there and just light somebody up, talk about it, bad about them. Now, one of the things that gets me is you see what our teenagers have to go through now. And when I was in high school, generally after you left school, and if you're having problems with somebody, you didn't have to deal with them until the next morning at school again. Well, now you get on the internet, and people are on there talking about what's going on at school. Well, did you see this? And then now you got online bullying. So generally, you got a break when you went home. Now you're seeing kids have to go home and deal with bullying online. well, hey, I heard this happen. What's up with that? Or, you know, hey, I heard you did this, you know, and you just can't leave it at home anymore, or leave it at school anymore. You're taking it with you. So there's a slandering going on. There's more and more slanderers, and whether or not they realize they are being slanderers, even at that. And this is just a complete rejection of God's way of life, isn't it? I mean, if we were just to kind of summarize this, it's just a complete rejection of God's way of life. Reading through a lot of scriptures, it just would make such a difference if people embraced it. You know, God has laid out a way of living. That's the law. It's the way we're wired. It kind of reminds me of if you're an engineer, or you hire an engineer or architect to build your home, right? And they work with the electricians to carry out the plans, and they work with the plumbers. And then after the house is built, the engineer architect's going to do a walkthrough with you. And he points out three switches here, and the one in the middle works the lights, one on the right works your fan. Oh, hold up now. I'm going to work whatever switch I want to work. And, you know, if I want that light to be on the left, I'm going to do it my way. Wait, well, hold up. That's not the way I wired you to be. There's the laws of how this is going to work. It's going to be this switch works the light, this one works the fan. No, I'm going to do it my way. Well, how effective is that going to be? Are you going to be effective at all? No. You can keep hitting your head against the wall. It's like, okay, this is the hot and this is the cold. Well, no, I want it the other way around. So I'm going to work the faucets the other way. Now I'm going to get hot this time when I want cold. Well, that's what we're seeing now, is that people want to do it their way. Even though we're wired a certain way, there's rules in how we're doing, how our bodies are made up, and how our minds work. The master planner has wired us a certain way and put laws to go along with it to make sure we're successful, and people are rejecting that. When we do see a rejection of God's laws, though, we do see it in kind of two different ways. And the first one is an outright rebellion against God, isn't it? It's kind of a, I don't want anything to do with him. He doesn't need to mingle around in my life, meddle around in my life. I don't even believe in God, is what some people would say. So I don't want anything to do with his way of life and his laws, for how society should work and how I should live my life. If I want to live with somebody my whole entire life and never get married or whatever it is, well, that's my business. I don't want God meddling in it. The second one, is a rationalizing away of God's law. And we see that in nominal Christianity today, where they take certain scriptures and certain things and they rationalize away the way what they figure to be correct and right in God's way, because they do believe in God, they believe in the Bible, but there's certain scriptures they're not happy about. Well, we'll take the Ten Commandments, but that fourth one we don't like because of this. And we're going to say that we like the Ten Commandments, but Paul and Christ did away with the law. They nailed it to the cross. And the great analogy I always like to hear is, you know, Christ put a ladder up on the cross and he had some 10-penny nails and a hammer. Gets up there with the big scroll and he's nailing the law to the cross, right? And he just nails it up there and it's done away with. It died with him. The other is that the yoke was unbearable, and they reference back to Acts 15, not knowing the context. Acts 15 is really about circumcision and the law of the oral Torah. And there's also the once saved, always saved crowd, which is just a dangerous doctrine. I mean, if you really think about that, once saved, always saved, it means you can almost do anything you want to do. Once I'm saved, I can go and do anything I want at that point. You know, I can go rob a bank. Well, that's fine. I've got God saved me. I'm done. It's over. He's got his blood. It's done and over. But the one I want to look at today, one argument against the law today I want to look at a little further, is God's law was only given to the Jews. It was only given to the Jews. In other words, and some people would say they probably get a little bit more closer to what they really, an inaccurate version here, but they'd say, well, it's only given to the Israelites at Mount Sinai. So when we state, and here's something that happened to me recently, I went up, there's some folks having a meeting in our building at Consumers, and I go upstairs and to have lunch with them, and they have, you know, salad, they have potatoes, and they have some pork. They're sitting there, sliced ham. And I get the salad and potatoes, and I don't get the pork, obviously. Well, why aren't you eating that? And I explained why, and, you know, referenced, you know, Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14, the flood chapter, and things of that nature. Well, that's just for the Jews, someone had said to me. Which was kind of interesting, you know, I've heard that before, obviously. I want to turn to a scripture here to start examining that one. Exodus 12. Exodus 12. Exodus 12, verse 37. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. A mixed multitude went up with them also, flocks and herds and a great deal of livestock. What I want to look at there is mixed multitude. I mean, NIV says many others. You look at some other scriptures, but basically there's a great deal of people that also left with Israel when they left Egypt that were not Israelites. So these folks weren't Israelites. I'm sure Egypt had went to war with other countries and enslaved many other people, brought them back to work with the Israelites. And they probably saw this as my opportunity to get out of here, get out of Dodge, right? And so they either accepted some of the culture of the Israelites or just wanted to go in tow with them and said, hey, if Moses and God have opened the door here, we're going to walk through it. So they walked out with them. But one thing you want to look here is that there's a mixed multitude. This wasn't just all Israelites that walked out of Egypt here. There's a mixture of people. Let's just turn back a few scriptures here to Exodus 19, 12:19. Exodus 12:19. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or native of the land. Turn forward a few to the 49, verse 49, Exodus 12, 49. One law shall be for the native-born and one for the stranger who dwells among you. Here we're seeing that God has not drawn a distinction between bloodlines or anything of that nature, of race. He's saying that there's to be one law for the people who dwell among Israel. Doesn't matter if you're a stranger or not. There's to be one law, and you're not, and that stranger also is not to be having leavening in his home during the days of unleavened bread. That means one way for everybody. So that's what he was saying here. So the days of unleavened bread would be kept by that stranger who's dwelling among them also. Stranger is in Strong's H1616. H1616. That's G-E-R, and I believe it's pronounced, and the guy online does a much better job of this than me, Ger. Ger. It means to be a sojourner, a temporary inhabitant, a newcomer, lacking inherited rights, a foreigner in Israel, though conceded rights. And you can read through much of the first five books here, and you can see that God is clear to Israel that you are to be respectful of the person sojourning among you, that stranger, because you are a sojourner in Egypt. So be respectful, treat him right, don't cheat him. Love them, respect them, just as you would a native-born person. So that's what the conceded rights are. You have some rights here. Sojourner means, and I've looked this up in Merriam-Webster, just for the fun of it here, I guess, to stay as a temporary resident, and synonymous with crash, visit, stay, or tarry. I like to kind of use the analogy here where I'm riding along. I like Western movies. It's the thing I like to do. I like to watch them. My wife doesn't really care for him very well. I really like John Wayne. She doesn't like John Wayne movies that well, so I watch them on my own. But say you're John Wayne, you're riding along on your horse, and you come along a town. I shouldn't say John Wayne, because John Wayne's a bad analogy here, and I'll tell you in a minute. I'm riding on a horse into a town, and it's Dodge City. And it says, turn your guns into the sheriff. There's no guns allowed in town. And that's for anybody. That's for the person who's a resident or a person wandering through. It doesn't matter. You got to turn your guns into the sheriff. Well, John Wayne would never turn his guns, and that's why he said it's a bad analogy. I have to. So I ride in town, and I say I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to ride in town. I'm going to carry my guns wherever I want. Guess what's going to happen? The sheriff's going to either throw me out of town or throw me in jail. So if I want to be successful in that town, I want to do what I want to do. I'm going to have to follow the laws of that town. I said, turn my guns in. So it doesn't matter if you're a person riding through town or the person living. There's one law for how you do business. Let's turn to Exodus 20. Exodus 20, verse 8, says, given 10 commandments here, and this is the Sabbath, talking the fourth one, the Sabbath here. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh is the Sabbath unto the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. Here it is again, stranger, being associated right along with the native Israelite, right? And he has the same rights or the same law given to him, and that's not to work in the Sabbath. And if there is a stranger dwelling among you, you can't say, well, the law's for me, but not for you, so you can go do what you want to do, and you can go do work that I wanted you to do. So I'm hiring you to do work, you go do it. What it says here, though, is that if it's within your gates, and I looked up gates here, it says in Strong's 8179, share gate, of space inside gate, i.e. marketplace, public meeting place, city, town, gate, of royal palace, castle, temple, court, or tabernacle. So essentially it's anything you own, anything within your gates, your dwelling place, whatever it is, you're not to have them working either. So that's the stranger also, not the Israelite, the stranger. Turn to Leviticus 18. Leviticus 18. Leviticus 18:24. Do not defile yourselves with any of these things. And go back a little bit real quick, give you context on this. God had just got done telling about what all the other nations that he put out before the Israelites did, what they were doing, what they shouldn't have been doing. And what he's saying is now that you're coming into this land, do not defile yourselves with any of these things, for by all these things the nations are defiled, which I'm casting out before you. For the land is defiled, therefore I visit the punishment of the iniquity upon it, and the land vomits out its inhabitants. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not commit any of these abominations, either any of your own nation or any stranger who dwells among you. And just one quick note on this is that you see the word my. These aren't the Jews' days. These aren't the Jews' laws or statutes. These are God's. He's referring here to his way of doing things. So again, that word stranger comes in. Not even the stranger. I don't care if he's been doing all these things his whole life. If he wants to come in and dwell among you in my land, among my people, you cannot be doing what the people did before. It's a stranger or the native born. It's period. It's pretty straightforward here. Leviticus 24:16. Let's just turn forward just a little bit here. And whoever blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall surely stone him, the stranger as well as him who is born in the land. When he blasphemes the name of the Lord, he shall be put to death. Let's jump forward a little bit to 22. You shall have the same law for the stranger and from your own country, for I am the Lord your God. Of course, you know what I'm pointing out here, the word stranger. Going back to 16, the stranger was to participate in the stoning. So it wasn't just, hey, this is our land, our people, we're going to stone them, and hey, you don't back off, buddy, you're not from here. God says, I want the stranger involved with it. And you can imagine why he wants a stranger involved with it. Because if that stranger is administering the punishment right along with everybody else, guess what he's going to see? He's going to see that person was put to death in a pretty bad way, and he's going to realize that, hey, that means me too if I slip up. So believe me, it's going to stick with the stranger too a lot more. God knew that. 22, it says the same law for a stranger and one from your own country. Doesn't matter. The same law applies, period, into story. Numbers 15. Verse 16. One law, one custom shall be for you and for the stranger who dwells among you. Again, same thing. You might say, well, Zach, that's right. One law for the stranger, one law for everybody else, or for the native born. But God's only wanting them to obey it. You know, I just want you to keep the code of the, you know, observe it, do it. That's what I want you to do. Just be a doer here. Turn to Deuteronomy 31. Let's examine that statement a little bit. Deuteronomy 31. This is the year of the release God's referring to here. After 7 years, you got the year of release. Verse 31:12. Gather the people together, men and women, and the little ones, and the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear and they may learn to fear the Lord your God and carefully observe all these words of this law. And what he had said is, you are to read the law. So going back to 11, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. So God wanted the law to be read every 7 years, and it didn't matter who it was. He wanted everybody gathered together. Didn't matter. Native-born, stranger, child, everybody was to hear it. And what does it go on to say? That they may learn to fear the Lord and carefully observe all the words. Learn. Now, to learn means you actually take it and apply it. It becomes part of you. No longer you're just hearing it and doing it. You've learned it. There's different stages of learning. But at this point, what God wants them to do is to learn it and apply it on their heart. No longer was it just to be observed. I want them to learn it, to be a part of them, to be part of the very fiber of who they are. As we know from the first chapter, John, Colossians, and Hebrews, other places too, that Jesus Christ was the God of the Old Testament, right? We know that. We've all proved it to ourselves. It's before Abraham was I Am. So if God was the God of the Old Testament, many people like to think of God a little different, though, don't they? They think that he is that, he came, he was born, he came to do away with all of his father's work, like some rebellious child that had just finally taken over daddy's business. And now that daddy's out of the way, he's going to do it his way. He's going to overturn and do everything God did, his father did. So that's what a lot of people like to think of it. He's just some guy that came in and overturned it all. He's going to do it his way now. Well, how is that? I mean, if he is the God of the Old Testament, how is he overturning the work that he did? Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense to me that if he's the God of the Old Testament, why would he come to do away with it? It doesn't make sense to me. But essentially what you're seeing is that if he's the God of the Old Testament, and we know from Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, forever, then he hasn't changed. He's not changed. He's the same guy that was given the law then, the same guy that's here today. If he hasn't changed, then we know that those scriptures are relevant. But let's examine the New Testament a little bit and see how that matches up with the Old Testament and the same statements. Turn to Romans 11:17. And if some of the branches were broken off, and you being a wild olive tree were grafted in among them, and with them became a partaker of the root and fatness of the olive tree. So what we read before this is that some branches were broken off. So if the tree represents Israel, some of the branches were broken off, and they're God's grafting in the Gentiles. Now when you graft something in, they become part of that now. We're just talking the way in and how they do, on how trees or genetics are modified, or the trees are modified, and the way they do it is they're grafting in branches from or parts of other trees into this tree and trying to get some of those genetics to change. And what it is that you've now grafted in, you've partaken part of that root, and what it is that the Gentiles are now taking part of that tree, that Israel. They're part of that now, symbolically, or there's no difference anymore. So the strangers are now fully part of Israel. So if you're going to be under Israel, now you've taken part of it. You're in it. Romans 2, verse 28. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart. So it's what matters is what's inside, right? It doesn't matter. God never wanted physical people. He wanted people that had a heart for him, that wanted to obey him. If you look at Deuteronomy 5:29, it says, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and always keep my commandments." So it was never a physical thing. It was a spiritual thing. He wanted the inside of them, their heart, their brain, the spirit of them, to want to be a part of his way. It wasn't that it was, well, I want these special group of people. He's collecting them like a, you know, kid collects baseball cards or something. You know, I just have these people over here. They're nice. I like them. They don't do anything I want them to do. You know? He wanted people that actually had a heart in them, that actually wanted to be a part of him. And what he's saying here is that a Jew is not one who is outwardly. It's one who is inside them. They have the circumcision of the heart, not the circumcision of the flesh. Galatians 3, turn to Galatians 3, verse 26. "For you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For as many of you were baptized in Christ Jesus, have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male or female, for all is one in Christ. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise." So now we are heirs. If we are baptized, we've been grafted in, we're part of that now promise given to Abraham of a people. And why did God select Abraham in the first place? Wasn't because he thought Abraham was a pretty cool guy, or he, you know, did all the hip things that all the cool kids did? Or did he like him because he was obedient? Well, we know that. That's what it says. He was obedient. Abraham's heart was that of what God wanted. And he said, if that guy can be obedient in this culture he's living in, then I know that as time goes on, if I start a people with him, I'm hoping that those people have the same heart in him. Well, obviously it didn't work out. People chose not to take after what their forefather Abraham was like. They did it their own way. They're wise unto themselves. But spiritually speaking, we can take part in that original promise of he'll be our God, we'll be his people. Romans 10:12. Let's turn there. Romans 10:12, "There is no distinction between Jew and Greek, for the same Lord over all." For the same Lord is over all. There's no distinction. So God doesn't see a difference. God didn't see a difference between the stranger and the native, did he? So there's to be one law for them, and there's to be one way for the Jew and the Greek. God does not, he's not a respecter of peoples. He's seeing that, hey, you know, if you want to be a part of my spiritual family here, you can be brought in. But here's the way of life that you need to live. 1 Corinthians 12. "For as the body is one, has many members, but all the members of that body, being many, are one body. So also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and all have been made to drink into one Spirit." That one Spirit is obviously Christ Jesus, the Holy Spirit of God the Father, one Spirit that flows through them. Again, there's one body. Mr. Miles last week spoke about how we all are part of the church. We all have various gifts and abilities. And again, it's the same analogy here. We're all part of the one body, one way. And if we're all working together properly, we can be really successful. And that's what he's saying here, is that it doesn't matter. You're all entering into one body, one Spirit. And if you're all one body, one Spirit, all working together in the same way, we're going to be really successful here. was kind of the message of that, of varying gifts. All working together can be really successful. But here, using the analogy that you're baptized into one body, you've all been brought in. It's not, well, that's the Gentiles' body, and this is the Israelites' body. We're not to be intermingled. We know God did away with that. Did away with that thought process and had to educate some of the folks like Peter, and that there is going to be no distinction anymore, and that any racism that should be flowing about or going about the Gentiles is to be ceased from here, because I've gone to them just as I'm going to you. Well, you know, the world continues to turn further and further into chaos. We have a clear calling, though, don't we? As this world's going further and further into chaos, and things are going worse, that we're to be in the world but not of it. So we can be in this world, we can have bombings going on, we can have people, our friends sometimes are going to do things that we don't like to do. We shouldn't be partaking of being a part of God's church, but we can't be a part of that, can we? We have to draw a line at some point and say, you know, that's not for me. You might want to do that, but that's not for me. Romans 5:13, let's turn there. Romans 5:13. For until the law, sin was in the world. But sin is not imputed where there is no law. So I wanted to look up that word impute, make sure I understood it. Impute means to credit to a person or cause. So without the law, without having a law, how do you know you're sinning? That's like driving down the highway. Me coming here today, driving 100 miles per hour. Well, close, right? Pretty close, not too far off. But if there is no signpost that says 70 miles per hour is the speed limit, I'm not speeding, am I? If you go over to the Autobahn in Germany, I think you can drive as fast as you want. You just can't drive recklessly is the difference there. So you can drive as fast as you want, you just can't drive recklessly. So there is no law against speeding, so you're not speeding. Well, here there is a law against speeding, so now I know I'm speeding if there is a sign put up. And what it's saying, Romans 5:13, until there was a law, sin was not imputed. People couldn't be credited with it. People didn't know. How do you know if you don't know? As Mr. Armstrong would say, you don't know that you don't know that you don't know. So if that's the case, then we need that. We need to know how to love our neighbor. You know, me coveting what my neighbor has, well, I like his sports car. That sports car in my neighbor's garage looks great, doesn't it? You know, I tell you what, he's going to leave on vacation. That's going to end up in my garage. You know, I like his mower. You know, his mower looks better than mine. Cuts better than mine. I think I'm just going to trade it off with him when he's gone one day. If he leaves that garage open, that's mine. So, if we don't have that law telling us not to covet, not to steal, not to do other things in here, then how do we know that we're not doing it properly? We didn't know. We wouldn't know. So, in order to love our neighbor properly, we need to have some laws put in place to know how to do that properly. And of course, we won't know how to love our God properly, unless there's some laws there too. I was talking about this very matter with someone who was very adamant about the recent debate on marriage, and took issue up with me about something I had posted on Facebook. And he proceeded to post a bunch of scriptures on, you know, well, here's the law, here, are you keeping all this? He was surprised to know that I didn't, you know, eat pork or did keep the Sabbath on the seventh day. But what he was saying was that a book that is over 2,000 years old, is old and obsolete. How can you apply that, this goofy book right here? You know, that book was wrote by guys that had no clue what was going on. You'd say computer to them, they would be, you know, whatever, what is that? So I want to ask a question. I asked him the same question. Well, would we be better off if everybody was keeping God's law? Would this be a better world? If we were all keeping God's law, would it be? Well, let's take a look. I mean, which one of God's laws in the Ten Commandments is so obsolete that it would not have stopped the bombing in Boston? Which one? I mean, thou shalt not murder? Oh, there it is. How about the shootings in Connecticut? Well, okay, that was the same thing. Stealing. You know, I go on the internet and I see, you know, more elderly have been robbed and beaten for their money. Well, okay, thou shalt not steal. So we go down the line, we start applying what's going on in this world and taking it back with God's old and obsolete law, and we say, wow, maybe it's not so old and obsolete after all. Turn to Psalms 119. As we were singing that psalm today, it struck a chord with me. Roxanne always plays it so wonderfully. I really enjoy it when she gets the opportunity to play it. I know she likes to play it too. The Psalms 119:97. Oh, how I love your law. It's my meditation all the day. You, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever with me. I have more understanding than my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients, because I keep your precepts. I have restrained my feet from every evil way that I keep your word. I have not departed from your judgments, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through your precepts I understand, therefore I hate every false way. Does that sound like such an evil document of books that's so obsolete? I mean, it sounds like something that's just absolutely wonderful that you'd want to be a part of, doesn't it? When we were singing that psalm today, I mean, did that seem out of place at all to you to sing that psalm and think about how good the law would be? And to think that if everybody kept it, everybody kept God's ways, how nice the world would be? Just wonderful thought in my mind. John 1:5 says, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. You know, this world refuses to comprehend the light of God. And we as His people need to let our light shine, even though this world's not going to understand why we do it.